And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, and I'm honored to be in your company today, tonight, whatever the time might be. It's a beautiful day here in Austin, Texas. I know people in the Northeast are suffering their fourth nor'easter. I hope you thaw out and get warm soon, but it's going to be near 80 today, I'm sorry to say. At least where y'all are concerned. I've got friends up in Massachusetts, and they're not very happy. Y'all take care, stay warm, stay safe. Now, I always start these programs talking about prayer requests. And I got one this week from David asking that he have protection. It seems that the Masons are trying to smear him, so he's asked for protection. So let's pray for a protective hedge around David. And I'd also like to ask you to continue praying for us here at the ministry as we get ready to move. We have been packing and disposing and rifling through 25 years of Texas research. And we filled one dumpster up already and countless trash bins. And we're a week and a half away from being in our new facility. So continue prayer for us as we tackle this move, and if you can afford to send a little help for the move, we would greatly appreciate that as well. We're not closing. We're not going anywhere. We're going to be here as long as God wants us to be, but if you can help, we would appreciate it. Like I said last week, if you don't have any extra left over, you take care of the family and yourself first, and if you've got a few extra, then please send them our way. It would be greatly appreciated. Now, we are going to be closing the office. We normally close it for Good Friday, but we're going to close the office on the 29th of March as well as the 30th of March as we move to our new location. Now, the phone system is being moved as well, but if you get voicemail, please leave a message. We will return your call as soon as we can, okay? Don't get the voicemail and then hang up on us. We want to help. We want to get items sent your way. And if our phone system isn't completely installed on April 2nd, we're going to utilize the voicemail to process things. We will call you back. We will get your information. We will get your order processed and on its way to you, okay? Now, I'll give you the address again at halftime, but it's going to be 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102, Spicewood, Texas, 78669. And I'll give you that again when we have our halftime break. But we have an open door policy at Power of Prophecy, so if you want to come by and check out the new digs, you're more than welcome to come by and see us. Well, give you something to drink. We'll be able to visit with you for a few, but with four of us going hard and heavy every day, we don't have a lot of spare time, but we will do what we can to help, okay? So please utilize the voicemail if we don't get a chance to answer your phone call. We will call you back as soon as we can, and please have patience with us as we conduct this move. It's a daunting task. You know, we've been in this building over 25 years, and you can imagine, if you've moved, you know how much stuff you accumulate in that period of time, and just magnified if you've moved recently and have never been in a spot for 25 years. It's astronomical, the amount of things that we have collected here. All right, well, let's get on with today's program. I titled this one, The Subversion of American Sovereignty, and I labeled it Volume 1 because periodically, you know, the powers that be come after us as Americans quite often, whether it's an attempt to silence free speech, whether it's what the lesbian mayor in Houston did, demanding that the pastors turn over their sermons to get approval before they could even preach it to their flock. They didn't want anything that was bad against homosexuals or trannies or whatever. They wanted to censor the message. Amazon's been censoring the message. YouTube and Google have been censoring the message. Now, I had a lady call yesterday asking what search engine she could use besides Google, because we know Google is limiting the search results to items that they want you to see, and most of it has a liberal slant. Well, Dr. Steve uses DuckDuckGo.com. They don't track you. They don't trace you. They don't take any information from you, and you're able to search on that website without fear of reprisal or fear of censorship that Google and YouTube are putting on people. So that's an option for you. I've started using Yahoo again. I don't know if they track you, but I don't think it could be as bad as what Google's doing. So I try to stay away from Google these days because I want the truth. I don't want what the liberal slant wants to put out there. But we're going to talk about gun control today. And I bring this up because of the recent shooting down in Parkland, Florida. We've all heard about it. And it's amazing how much these people want to control what we can and can't have. Guns being first and foremost, free speech as a close second, I think. I wonder sometimes if some of these events aren't staged, like Sandy Hook, just to foment fear in people and make people demand gun control, further gun legislation. We have a number of gun laws on the books, assault rifles being one of them that's being banned, and there are laws already on the books to handle that. Now, there are some dealers that are allowed to handle assault rifles, assault weapons, but automatic weapons have been banned for quite a while. And the average Joe just can't go pick up a M16 that has a selector on the side that allows you to choose whether you want a three-shot burst, full automatic, or one at a time, or semi-automatic, as they say. So I've pulled up some interesting information here. The first one is a factual look at guns in America. There are approximately 270 million firearms, civilian firearms in America. 200,000 times a year, it's reported, women use a gun to defend against sexual abuse. And 60% of felons, that's right, 3 out of 5 felons, say they won't mess with an armed victim. That's important to know. Now, let's go international. Let's go international. Nations with strict gun control laws have substantially higher murder rates than those who do not in general. In fact, 9 European nations with the lowest gun ownership rate have a combined murder rate 3 times that of 9 European nations with the highest gun ownership rate. Everybody wants to talk about England, the United Kingdom, their gun ban. Possession of handguns is illegal in England and the United Kingdom. But per 100,000 people in the UK, there are 2,034 violent crimes compared to America, where there are only 466 violent crimes against the same number of people. Okay? Now, the Labour Party banned handguns in 1997 in the UK. The number of recorded violent attacks soared by 77% to 1.2 million by 2007. That's more than 2 attacks every minute. Kitchen knives are being used in as many as half of all stabbings in the UK, and has prompted a group of doctors to call for a ban on long pointed kitchen knives. If these criminals have guns are banned, they ban knives, they'll grab a hammer. How are you going to ban a hammer? Now, this is staggering. An analysis of FBI crime statistics found that states that adopted concealed carry laws reduced murders by 8.5%, reduced rapes 5%, reduced aggravated assaults 7%, and reduced robberies 3%. Now, I started this program saying that this was spawned by the recent events in Parkland, Florida, with just one exception. One. Every public mass shooting in the United States since 1950 has taken place where citizens are banned from carrying guns, gun-free zones. Despite the strict restrictions of guns in Europe, they have had three of the worst six school shootings. Now, last week I talked about Kennesaw, Georgia, adopting a policy where every homeowner had to have a firearm in the house, at least one. The residential burglary rate in Kennesaw, Georgia dropped 89% compared to just 10% in the rest of Georgia. The violent crime rate in Kennesaw is 85% lower than the national average, just by requiring homeowners to own a gun. Those statistics are staggering. But here's some more for you. In 2013, I'm looking at a pie chart here. Deaths by cause. Illness claimed 2.4 million Americans. Non-gun violence claimed 24,000, almost 25,000 Americans. We lost over 35,000 in auto accidents. We lost 35,663 to overdose. We lost 65,000, almost 66,000 to other injuries. And we lost 33,636 lives to guns. Contrary to popular belief, it's not mostly Chicago and Baltimore that's part of that number. Maybe. But let's see. We lost more people in auto accidents. We lost a lot more people to drug overdose. And we lost almost twice as many people to other injuries than gun violence. Now, of the gun violence statistics that I just read you, 21,000 plus were suicide. 11,675 were homicide. And only 502 were mass shootings. One is too many. Don't get me wrong. One is too many, but banning guns is not the answer. So let's talk about the history of gun control. You know, throughout history, there have been despots, tyrants, dictators, and kings who have imposed their will over those who they conquered. Now, after they defeated somebody, many of these rulers led cruel, ruthless, and abusive regimes that kept the subjugated powerless to resist. I can think of one right off the top of my head, and that was the Bolshevik government in Russia. But there's also Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, the Caesars of Rome, the pharaohs of Egyptian time. They conquered people, and then they kept their power by ruling with an iron fist so that people could not resist. You take away their weapons, they become slaves or serfs, and they can't do as much damage. Now, in America, before the Revolutionary War, some colonists did own firearms, but just before the Revolutionary War began, King George's generals implemented a gun confiscation policy. And that was a driving force behind our Second Amendment. As gun control becomes more of an issue, it's vital and appropriate to examine the history of gun control around the world. and the carnage visited upon the innocent by gun-grabbing tyrants. Soviet Union comes to mind right off the top of my head. Solzhenitsyn said over 66 million were killed in Russia. Soviet Russia was established in 1917 after the Bolshevik Revolution, but the citizenry was able to keep firearms until 1929. Tens of millions of Soviet dissidents, or anyone the country's leadership believed were a threat, were rounded up and either murdered or placed in a labor camp and forced to work to their death. We also can talk about the Ottoman Empire. They implemented gun control in 1911, and beginning in 1915 and lasting until 1917, some 1.5 million Armenians that lived within this empire were rounded up and murdered by the Young Turks. Tex talked about that in his audio set, A Sea of Blood, and that is a powerful three-hour program that you really should have if you don't have it already. Now, let's move to Germany. And Hitler's Nazi Germany established gun control in 1938. Hitler said, quote, "The most foolish mistake we could possibly make would be to allow the subject races to possess arms. History shows that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms have prepared their own downfall by doing so." Hitler continues, "German troops alone will bear the sole responsibility for the maintenance of law and order throughout the occupied Russian territories." China, Mao Zedong. They established gun control in 1935. And from 35 to 52, some 20 million or more citizens and political dissidents were murdered. Mao once said regarding gun control, "War can only be abolished through war, and in order to get rid of the gun, it is necessary to take up the gun." So Mao got rid of guns, and he subjected his people to all sorts of misery. I think they even charged the family for the bullet. Now, Cambodia, Pol Pot, they started gun control in 1956, and during this regime, between 75 and 77, as many as 1 million educated people whom Pol Pot thought were a threat were murdered. Wow. So Pol Pot killed at least 1 million educated people. They were a threat to his regime. You start adding that up, that's a lot of people. I mean, we're talking close to 100 million people that were murdered because of gun control. Now, Bradley Dean on WorldNet Daily had a very poignant sentence that he wrote, "Our forefathers did not arm the American people for the purpose of hunting, but rather to protect themselves from those who were doing the hunting, namely the tyrant King George." Now, there's a great fallacy on gun control. Thomas Sowell wrote this and was published in The Guardian. Thomas Sowell wrote, "The key fallacy of so-called gun control laws is that such laws do not in fact control guns. They simply disarm law-abiding citizens while people bent on violence find firearms readily available." Well, as you just found out in the stats from UK, they're using sharp kitchen knives, pointed kitchen knives now. They'll use a hammer. "Those who are intent on doing evil will use whatever weapon they can find." Now, perhaps the gun control zealots' strongest talking point is Britain has stronger gun controls than the U.S. But if you look back through history, you'll find that Britain has had a lower murder rate than the United States for more than two centuries. For most of that time, the British had no more stringent gun control laws than the United States. In the middle of the 20th century, you could buy a shotgun in London, no questions asked. In New York, they had the stringent Sullivan Law restricting gun ownership and still had several times the gun murder rate of London. Neither guns nor gun control was the reason for the difference. People were the difference. Other countries with stronger gun control laws than the United States, such as Russia, Brazil, and Mexico, have higher murder rates than the United States. Gun ownership has been three times as high in Switzerland as in Germany, but the Swiss have had lower murder rates. Now, Jay Snyder in Human Events had an interesting article on gun grabbers undermining sovereignty in the United States. He writes, for decades, gun grabbers in politics, academia, and media have promoted various gun control schemes to weaken, if not ultimately eliminate, the individual Second Amendment rights of law-abiding American citizens to keep and bear arms. They've proposed federal firearm registrations, gun owner licensing, handgun purchase waiting periods, one gun a month purchase limitations, bans on inexpensive handguns, bans on semi-automatic firearms, bans on 50 caliber firearms, bans on personal defensive firearms use, limitations on gun shows, and almost any other restrictive approach they can dream up. Gun grabbers invariably argue that such proposals will diminish the ability of criminals to use firearms in the perpetration of criminal acts. Criminals, who by definition do not obey laws prohibiting crime, are not dissuaded by laws against gun possession or use. John Lott, in his book More Guns, Less Crime, writes, laws that facilitate citizen access to firearms correlate with rates of reduction in crimes of violence. Criminals don't want to face armed citizens. Japan, when they bombed Pearl Harbor, what kept them from storming the beaches of California, Oregon, Washington? They were worried about all the guns that Americans own. John Bolton, a diplomat, notes, Americans traditionally understood sovereignty to mean our collective right to govern ourselves within our constitutional framework. Bolton points out, though, that today's liberal elite dismissed the historical understanding of sovereignty. They postulate a concept of multinational authority according to which individual states, including our United States, must conform to the rules of this new entity, the New World Order. If the new entity thinks that citizens do not have a right to keep and bear arms, and the U.S. is a member of that entity, then it's goodbye to the Second Amendment and Americans' gun rights. Now, during his presidency, Obama wanted to do an end run around American gun owners by signing an international agreement and subverting citizens' rights. Now, Dave Workman from Gun Mag has an interesting article. He writes, news reports, including one in the Washington Post, have repeatedly referred to gun safety groups that have jumped into the post-Parkland fray. But that is a deliberate error on the part of the press. These are gun control organizations. In recent years, they have dropped the pretenses and come out of the closet as gun prohibition lobbying groups. They said gun safety, but they mean gun control. Ask any of these gun safety advocates to repeat the four rules or Ten Commandments of firearm safety, and they're stymied. Safety, all too often, translates to removing guns from the home, the neighborhood, and ultimately, society. Banning guns will not prevent determined people from launching massacres or other mayhem. Case in point, the recent bombing that went on throughout Austin. Now, we're West Austin, so none of this occurred near us, affected any of us, but this guy used, they're saying now, a pipe bomb. The internet has all kinds of things that you can look up on building weapons, and this guy was smart enough that he was able to create, well, one of them was a tripwire, improvised exploding device that injured two guys, happened to trip it while they were walking on the sidewalk. But he was stuffing nails and other pieces of shrapnel in these pipes, and when they went off, they created all kinds of havoc. There wasn't a gun, and these were items that this kid bought at Home Depot, different electronic stores. The evil in this world will create mayhem whether there's guns or not. Now, Mr. Workman continues, for the past several years, gun control groups have tried to repackage themselves as gun safety organizations. Whether they talk about safety or gun responsibility or gun reform, it's still gun control and they know it. Now these groups appear to be deeply involved in exploiting bereaved high school students following the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School tragedy. In the emotionally charged debate, high schoolers might be reminded that the right to keep and bear arms is enshrined in the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights, and it is of equal importance as the First Amendment right that is now enabling these students to speak their grievances and even meet face to face with President Donald Trump. One of the most important lessons of history, a lesson learned the hard way by the founders who wrote the Constitution and included the Second Amendment to make certain they never again had to face a tyrannical government. It's much easier to resist when you have the tools, and keeping those tools close at hand is perhaps the greatest deterrent to government tyranny. I keep saying it. If they take our guns, we become serfs. We become slaves. They become tyrants, and they can do with us as they please. I've got another report here. Handguns comprised 52% of all new guns sold to civilians and law enforcement in 2014, compared to 35% in 2000. I laughed and joked with people that when Obama was president, the gun manufacturers lived life on the hog because his continued threats to implement gun control sent people in droves to go buy weapons, ammo, reloading tools, so that they would have an ability to fight back against the tyrants in D.C., the malarial mosquitoes in the swamp, if you want to put it that way. Now, as of 2016, these are estimates of private firearm ownership in the U.S. Households with a gun, 36 to 49%. Adults owning a gun, 23 to 36%. From 2007 to 2012, Gallup polls conducted research and found the following levels of self-declared gun ownership among different groups of people. Males own 45%, females 15%, whites 33%, non-white 22%, Republican 38%, Independent 31%, Democrats 22%. So Democrats could scream gun control, but they own them as well. 22% of them. Now, a 2013 Gallup poll was conducted and gun owners stated they had their own firearms for the following reasons. Protection against crime, 60%. Hunting, 36%. Recreation and target shooting, 21%. There was a survey conducted by the U.S. Center for Disease Control found Americans use guns to frighten away intruders who are breaking into their homes about 498,000 times per year. This was a 1994 survey. Almost all national survey estimates indicate that defensive gun uses by victims are at least as common as offensive uses by criminals, with estimates of annual uses ranging from about 500,000 to more than 3 million. Studies that directly assess the effect of actual defensive uses of the guns, this is incidents where the victim used a gun against an attack or a threatening offender, have found consistently lower injury rates among the gun-using crime victims compared with victims who used other self-protective strategies. Whistles, screams, car alarms, mace. Now, a 1982 survey of male felons in 11 state prisons across the U.S., found 34% had been scared off, shot at, wounded, or captured by an armed victim. 40% had decided not to commit a crime because they knew or believed that the victim was carrying a gun. 69% personally knew other criminals who had been scared off, shot at, wounded, or captured by an armed victim. Now, I started the show saying that 3 out of 5 felons won't attack an armed individual, 60%. Well, this was a 1982 survey, and that was 40%. So concealed carry works. Being armed works. It's part of our constitutional God-given right to be able to defend ourselves. Now, we're going to have a lot more in the next half hour. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett, and I am so honored to have you listening to me today. I'm getting so much feedback and a few critiques, and I appreciate that. But keep your comments coming. I appreciate it. We'll be right back after this brief message. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Power of Prophecy. I have got a tremendous book for you today. It was written by Susanna Gracia Hupp. Powerful book. The title is From Lubies to the Legislature, One Woman's Fight Against Gun Control. In 1991, there was a mass shooting at Lubies Cafeteria up in Killeen, Texas. And it made news around the world and turned an unknown chiropractor into a national champion for the right of ordinary citizens to carry guns for self-defense. You see, Susanna Hupp was having lunch with her parents when a man crashed his pickup through a window and began shooting people. When the shooting stopped, her mother and father, 21 other people, and the shooter were dead. No one was interviewed more about that shooting than Hupp. She became an icon for gun rights and the Second Amendment because she was willing to be interviewed by the news media and because she told them what they did not expect to hear. She was not mad at the shooter, and she did not blame guns. She blamed politicians who had legislated away her right to carry a gun to protect herself and her family. No one has had more to do with passing the rash of state concealed carry laws that swept the country in the 1990s. She told her story to the national media, testified before Congress and numerous state legislatures, and served more than 10 years in the Texas legislature. Hupp recounts how guns have affected her life, from playing with cap guns with her brother to filing bills in the Texas legislature to allow students with concealed carry licenses to pack guns on college campuses. She also provides advice to citizens about lobbying their legislatures and dealing with the media. She tells what happened on that day at the Lubies Cafeteria in Killeen and how it affected her and her family. She recalls making the stupidest decision of her life when she decided several months before the shooting to obey a bad law. She stopped carrying a revolver in her purse for fear she would be caught and lose her chiropractor's license. That decision left her unarmed at the moment she needed her gun the most. From Lubies to the Legislature, Susanna Hupp. This book is only $20. It's a hardcover book. It's 186 pages. It's only $20, but it is full of vital information. You really need to have a copy of this. If you cherish American sovereignty as much as I do, you owe it to yourself to read this book, From Lubies to the Legislature. Beautiful book. You need to have it. $20. Please add $5 for shipping and handling, total of $25. You can order it by phoning us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. You can go online to our shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. Either place you go, you can use your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express. We'll be happy to process your order, get it shipped out usually within 24 hours after we receive your order. The next business day, we want you to have this, and we don't want you to have to wait too terribly long. Now, I know that mail going to the Midwest and Northeast that have been hammered by these snowstorms is going to be a little longer to get there, but we will get it out post-haste so that it's in the system and can eventually truck its way up to you. And you owe it to yourself to have a copy of this book, From Lubies to the Legislature. Now, if you want to send a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. You can mail it to our new address, which is 4819 R.O. Drive. Suite 102102, Spicewood, Texas, 78669. Okay? Now let's return to our regular program. We're talking about The Subversion of American Sovereignty, Volume 1, Gun Control. And I guess the burr that got under my saddle on this was the shootings at Parkland in Florida at the high school. And it seems to be a staged event. There's a lot of different theories so far. I mean, I've seen where the little ball-headed girl that looks like Sinead O'Connor, Emma Gonzalez, is actually related to the boy Hogg, and they're from California, and they're professional actors. Be that as it may, one life is too many to lose to guns. But if they take away our guns, we're looking at millions of people who will die. We will become slaves. And I started thinking about Columbine, Sandy Hook. The one thing that a lot of these shooters have in common, and not just the school shootings, but other shootings as well, is psychiatric drug use. Well, I found an article by Selwyn Duke in The New American, and he writes, while mass killers generally have guns in their hands, another commonality is that they often have psychiatric drugs in their blood. The Parkland, Florida shooter was on medication for emotional issues. Unlike with guns, legal drugs aren't a sexy issue that can be used to scare people and win votes. The Guardian reported last year pharmaceutical companies spend far more than any other industry to influence politicians. They've poured close to $2.5 billion into lobbying and funding members of Congress over the past decade. This dwarfs the gun lobby's political contributions. So those signs at NRA, who have you killed today? Maybe they should be talking about Big Pharma and who they've killed today. We've got this prescription opioid crisis running rampant across the country. I read a statistic earlier where more people died of overdoses. A lot of them were overdosing on prescription meds. So let's talk about Sandy Hook, the Newtown, Connecticut killer, Adam Lanza. He was on medication. Eric Harris, the Columbine killer, was taking Luvox, which is a widely prescribed type of antidepressant drug. Solvay Pharmaceuticals concedes that during short-term controlled clinical trials, now this is the manufacturer of Luvox, they said 4% of children and youth taking Luvox developed mania, a dangerous and violence-prone mental derangement characterized by extreme excitement and delusion. Eric Harris was on this. Patrick Purdy, who murdered 5 children and wounded 30 in a schoolyard shooting in Stockton, California in 1989, was taking amitriptyline, an antidepressant, as well as the antipsychotic drug Thorazine. Kip Kinkle, 15, murdered his parents in 1998 and the next day went to his school in Oregon and opened fire on his classmates, killing 2 and wounding 22 others. He was on Prozac and Ritalin. Aaron Ray Ibarra of Mount Lake Terrace, Washington, allegedly opened fire with a shotgun at Seattle Pacific University in 2014, killing 1 student and wounding 2 others. Ibarra said he'd been prescribed Prozac and Risperdal to help him with his problems. Jose Reyes was a 7th grader in Nevada that went on a shooting rampage at his school in October of 2013. He was taking Prozac, an antidepressant. Aaron Alexis, the Navy Yard shooter in September of 2013, sprayed bullets at office workers in a cafeteria, killing 13 people, including himself. He was prescribed trazodone by his VA doctor. 1988, 31-year-old Lori Dan went on a shooting rampage in a second-grade classroom in Winnetka, Illinois, killing 1 child, wounding 6. She was taking anafrenil as well as lithium to treat mania. 14-year-old Michael Carneal in Paducah, Kentucky, late 97, traveled to Heath High School and started shooting students in a prayer meeting taking place in the school's lobby. He killed 3, left one paralyzed. He was reportedly on Ritalin. 2005, 16-year-old Jeff Weiss in Minnesota on the Red Lake Indian Reservation shot and killed 9 people, wounded 5 others before killing himself. He was taking Prozac. 47-year-old Joseph Westbecker, just a month after he began taking Prozac in 1989, shot 20 workers at Standard Gravure Corporation in Louisville, Kentucky, killing 9. Eli Lilly, the maker of Prozac, later settled a lawsuit that was brought by the survivors. Now, in the case of Paxil user Christopher Pittman, who murdered his grandparents, we find that Paxil's known adverse drug reactions, according to the drug's FDA-approved label, include mania, insomnia, anxiety, agitation, confusion, amnesia, depression, paranoid reaction, psychosis, hostility, delirium, hallucinations, abnormal thinking, depersonalization, and lack of emotions, among others. Wow. Those are some serious side effects. Now, if the drugs pose such a threat, there should be a stream of high-profile lawsuits, don't you think? Nope. To avoid the bad exposure this would bring, the drug companies spend hundreds of millions of dollars settling claims out of court and cloak them with confidentiality agreements. Now, it's unlikely that the psychiatric drugs are entirely to blame for these mass shootings. We've seen a decline in faith, entertainment that's become increasingly decadent and mindlessly violent. And the fame committing a massacre brings can be alluring to lonely, disturbed people, thus breeding copycat crimes, to name just a few of the factors. Now, most Americans blame the government, not guns. According to a recent Rasmussen survey, 54% of Americans believe the government is to blame for these mass shootings, while only 33% blame guns and 11% are unsure what attributed to the shooting. Now, when the participants of this survey had children of elementary or secondary school age, 61% blamed the government, only 23% blamed the guns. Carrie Lear in Punching Bag Post writes, "We aren't surprised by these numbers considering the multiple failures from officials that have come to light following the shooting." Scott Peterson, the armed resource officer at the Parkland High School, did not enter the building during the shooting. "It's really disturbing that we had a law enforcement individual there specifically for this reason, and he did not engage," said Robert Runcie, the county superintendent. Now, you didn't hear about it a lot on mainstream news, but there was another attempted school shooting last week, and I think it was in Maryland. And the school resource officer engaged this student that was hell-bent on copycatting what happened in Florida. Both of them fired one shot, and the perpetrator of the crime was killed. Now, you want to hear something terrifying? The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office received calls about Cruz, the kid that committed this massacre in Parkland, in November of 2017. The host family he lived with called to report his violent behavior and called authorities after he said he was going to buy tons of ammo, but no action was taken. The FBI received a tip about Cruz in January of this year about how he expressed a desire to kill people. In these tips, people specifically voiced concerns that he would commit a school shooting. The FBI did not take any actions or investigate. Well, David Clark, the former Milwaukee County Sheriff, weighed in on this, and he insinuated that the student survivors in the Florida shooting were manipulated by Democratic billionaire George Soros to organize for gun control. In a tweet, the former sheriff wrote that media appearances and an activism campaign from students of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School against gun violence had George Soros' fingerprints all over it. Now, an aide to a Florida state lawmaker was fired Tuesday after emailing a conspiracy theory to a reporter. He wrote, "Both kids in the picture are not students here, but actors that travel to various crises when they happen," wrote Benjamin Kelly, an aide to state representative Sean Harrison. Well, he was fired. He was fired promptly. We can't have truth out there, can we? MoveOn.org. That's a George Soros operation. It's one of his many. Recently sent out an email blast to people. It read, "Dear MoveOn member, at a rally in Parkland, Florida over the weekend, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School student Emma Gonzalez had this message to share. To the politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA, telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this, we call BS. Brave students are leading the way, and it is up to us to follow them. The students in Parkland are turning their grief into action. Less than a week after 17 of their classmates and teachers were murdered in the hallways of their school, these students have made their demands very clear. They want to kick out members of Congress who have taken money from the NRA and make the NRA so toxic that no one else takes money from them in the future. They want a ban on assault weapons that have caused so much carnage in schools, nightclubs, concerts, and movie theaters across the country. With your help, we will boost organizing for the student-led marches and walkouts in March and April. We will help ensure that millions of people hear what these young people are asking of all of us. We will keep campaigning to curb the power of the NRA. We will look for ways to support these and other student organizers against the gun lobby." Okay. So, less than a week after this occurs, MoveOn.org is pumping them up. And there were 50-some walkouts that were scheduled for the 24th of March. Organized. Less than a week after this shooting. I agree with Sheriff Clark. It has Soros' fingerprints all over it. This was an organized activity from a multi-billion dollar conglomeration to promote gun control. I think Soros needs to go back to Hungary and stay there and keep out of American politics. That's just me, I guess. Now, Chuck Baldwin had a very interesting column here. He writes, "The ultimate goal of gun control extremists such as Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, and others has always been gun confiscation. The plan is not to control the private ownership of firearms, but to prohibit the ownership of firearms. Donald Trump was elected on the promise of protecting our Second Amendment. But recently, President Trump voiced support for confiscating guns from certain individuals deemed to be dangerous, even if it violates due process rights. Trump's statements have served as a rallying cry for gun grabbers all over America to enact gun confiscation laws. So far, five states have passed what they call red flag laws, which allows police agencies to confiscate guns from someone deemed to be dangerous by either a law enforcement officer or a family member before the individual has committed a crime. Six have already passed this red flag law, or it's been signed into law by executive order of the governor. They include California, Connecticut, Indiana, Oregon, Washington, and Rhode Island. There are at least 24 other states that are considering passing red flag laws. Thankfully, Texas is not one of them. It didn't take long for law enforcement in Seattle to begin their Nazi-esque assault on gun owners. This is in Seattle. And an incident involves a man who lived in Belltown who neighbors said had been intimidating people for the past year with a gun holstered at his side. Mental illness is suspected, but that new law allowed the police to legally disarm him. These snowflakes wouldn't have lasted in the wild, wild west, would they? Everybody carried a six shooter back then. Pretty much everybody. Now, you ready for this? The open carrying of a firearm is legal in the area where this took place. So this guy was violating no gun law whatsoever. Plus, he didn't remove this pistol from his holster or brandish it in any way. The man was known. You get that? Known. To nearby bars and restaurants. But known for what? There were a volume of complaints. What does that mean? How many? People complain about other people all the time. But there was no report of this man exhibiting violent behavior. So we have a U.S. citizen committed no crime and is denied his natural right of self-defense because they confiscate this gun for a whole year. He can't get it back. And since he's been red flagged, you think he's going to be able to buy another one? Not a chance in Hades. Won't happen. So when Trump promised to add mental health regulations to gun purchases and ownership, he opened Pandora's box. Mental health regulations for gun ownership is what extremist gun nuts like Schumer, Pelosi, Feinstein, all of them, have been trying to accomplish for decades. Now, Chris Kobach is the Secretary of State of Kansas, and he wrote an excellent analysis of the constitutional violations of these red flag laws. He writes, "The Fourth Amendment makes clear that a person cannot be denied of liberty to exercise one's constitutional right to bear arms without due process of law. The confiscation order can be based on the testimony of only one person claiming that the gun owner poses a risk of safety to himself or others. The standard for obtaining an ex parte order against a gun owner is absurdly low. One need only show reasonable cause to believe that the person may pose a risk. That's lower than probable cause, which is standard for obtaining a search warrant. To have the confiscation order lifted, the gun owner must prove he does not pose a threat to himself. The bill even authorizes local enforcement officers to charge the gun owner a storage fee for confiscating and storing his gun." Chuck continues, "As it stands right now, Donald Trump has opened the door for more damage being done to the Second Amendment than any other president, Democrat or Republican, in our lifetime." Well, speaking about MoveOn.org and all their protests that they had organized, one teacher was placed on leave for questioning this walkout. R. Hawkins on Breitbart writes that a Sacramento, California teacher, Julianne Benzel, was placed on administrative leave for questioning whether Students for Life would be allowed to walk out of class the way Students for Gun Control were. Her questions were viewed as anti-abortion by some, which resulted in complaints and finally in her being placed on paid leave. Benzel explained her position. "If the schools are going to allow one group of students to get up during class and walk out to protest one issue, would they still give the same courtesy to another group of students who wanted to get up and walk out to protest?" And I use the example of abortion. The school district defended its decision, saying the teacher was not penalized or placed on leave because of her viewpoints. The district can clarify that the action was taken due to complaints from parents and students involving the teacher's communications regarding the student-led remembrance activities. Now, she was asked to come back to school on a Friday, but she demurred and said that she would take the day off instead. She said, "I teach over 120 students, and administrators took two students and one parent's complaint, took that minuscule evidence, did not corroborate it with any other students or parents, and basically targeted me." Well, she wasn't alone. There was a student in Ohio, Jacob Shoemaker, who was suspended because he didn't want to pick sides during the gun debate on the national walkout day. So he stayed in class instead of joining. The student argued that divisive politics have no place in America's schools and refused to take sides in the debate. Now, a friend of his took a picture of this citation and posted it online where it went viral. And the letter said, "The student refused to follow instructions after being warned repeatedly by several administrators. The student not permitted on school property." These walkouts were conducted by teachers, PTA. It was supposed to be an act of remembrance, but it was a gun protest, anti-gun protest. That begs the question, are they trying to indoctrinate our students, our children, into gun control frenzy? I think they are. I think they're violating the public trust by doing this. In the Washington Times, the Chicago Republican Party has filed a complaint against the school system in Chicago, accusing the schools of violating laws against political indoctrination on public property. Chris Cleveland, who is the chairman of the GOP in Chicago, said, "The problem is we've got teachers who are taking our kids out for a political rally on public property and public time. This is political indoctrination, and it is totally inappropriate. More than 185,000 students at nearly 3,000 schools participated in this walkout in the Chicago area." Mr. Cleveland said his third grader school had planned to escort participating students in grades 5 through 8 outside to observe the walkout after making posters on gun control. Clearly, they're pushing a political viewpoint upon them. He said the students were not told enough to have formed an informed political opinion on this, and they're going to do whatever the teachers tell them to do. I told you about last week, Bernie Sanders attended one of these rallies with armed guards. So did Governor Cuomo in New York. Anytime anybody gets close to him, the gun-carrying bodyguards push people away from him. Now, this is by Bob Everly in GOP USA. A grieving father slammed Fox News host for gun control agenda. So the push for gun control isn't just on the left-wing networks like CNN or MSNBC, but there are hosts on Fox News that are doing this. When President Trump invited parents and students from Stoneman Douglas High School to the White House, one father stood out. Andrew Pollack lost his daughter in the shooting, and he has been outspoken ever since on the need for safety measures to be implemented in the schools. Think about it. Over the years, there hasn't been a call for gun control to keep people safe in courthouses. There hasn't been a call for gun control to keep people safe when they go to concerts or sporting events. Why? The answer is simple. Elected officials decided that those areas are worth keeping safe, so they implemented measures such as metal detectors, searches, armed guards at these locations. Is a courthouse more important than a school filled with children? That is the question that needs to be asked. Every time someone shoots up a school, which is a gun-free zone of defenseless kids and adults, the call from the left is for gun control. What about implementing safety measures that are already being used at other venues? To not do so shows the true agenda of the left. The elite want to take our guns. They want to turn us into serfs, slaves, while they continue to inhabit the swamp that is D.C. and our local legislatures. They want power. They want control. And if they have to have gun control to get it, that's what they're going to do. They are subverting our Constitution daily. They are attacking it. When they came out with a saying that the Constitution was a living document, they spit on the graves of each of our forefathers who wrote this document. We need to stand up for the Constitution. We have a right to free speech. We have a right to assemble. We have a right to keep and bear arms. We have a right to avoid being unnecessarily searched and items seized. These are inherent rights that were given to us by our forefathers, and we need to protect them. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I'm Jerry Barrett. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy, and I pray that you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.